Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us here today. I would like to greet all of you and say welcome to our Indigenous brothers and sisters, chiefs, leaders, elders, and youth who are here with us today. We also welcome honored guests and excellencies. My name is Chiso Oros. I'm Yaqui and Zuni from North America. I'm the community coordinator with Seventh Generation Fund, and I've been here to the Permanent Forum several times, as well as involved in the Indigenous Youth and Global Caucuses. I'm going to be moderating today's session, and I would like to introduce Robbie Romero. Robbie Romero is of Pueblo and Apache peoples. He rose to prominence with the global broadcast of his first music video campaign, It Is Too Late, and designation as a United Nations Ambassador of Youth for the Environment. Over the past two decades, he has used his talent and art as a social tool. His groundbreaking and award-winning native rock music has taken him from the heart of Indian country to the main street of the world. And Robbie will talk a little bit about the videos we're about to watch. Thank you.
Hear me? Hi, I'm Robbie Romero. I'm Apache, and I am honored to be here with all of you to share a little bit of art and activism. This screening we're going to have here at the beginning of this panel discussion is a music picture entitled Who's Going to Save You? And it was created to bring attention to the global crisis of climate change from an Indigenous perspective. And I'll speak a little bit more about it and the campaign that goes along with it once we've seen it. So we are going to air it now. And if our UN technicians can lower the lights and roll the film, that would be wonderful. Thank you. for thousands. Can you hear me? Thank you. For thousands of years, Indian nations and peoples lived in harmony and balance with the natural world. We evolved highly intelligent and ecologically sophisticated ways of life in North America based on a profound appreciation of natural law and the well-being of all living things. In the natural world, our ancestors were free and interwoven in the delicate web of life within our traditional territories. There was a spiritual intelligence and respect without which we could not exist. Through song and ceremonial practice, this sacred interrelationship was celebrated and honored. Suddenly, all that changed. When the Europeans arrived with their thirst for riches, hunger for empire, and weapons of violence, life out of balance began. They worked to destroy what they could not comprehend or understand and treated our peoples as something less than human. They relentlessly ravaged our homelands and traditional territories. The result was genocide and the extinction of hundreds of native nations. Tens of millions perished. These unspeakable events gave birth to one of the most exciting and powerful movements in history, an indigenous call to consciousness. On International Mother Earth Day, 22 April, with our partners, the American Indian Law Alliance and the Seventh Generation Fund, Native Children Survival launched the Project Protect Awareness Campaign, a campaign designed to create people's power by turning world citizens onto this indomitable indigenous movement and to share the warnings and concerns of our peoples. Who's Gonna Save You, the music picture you just saw, is the first single and music picture to be released in support of the Project Protect campaign. This past Valentine's Day, the Project Protect campaign began its educational initiative from the oldest inhabited village in North America, Taos Pueblo, home of the Red Willow people. We asked the children there at Taos Pueblo Day School to share their love, feelings, and concerns for Mother Earth with you here today. I'm honored now to present their voice and their message to you now. If the UN technicians can roll this message from our youth.
Native Americans should be the first to stand up for Mother Earth because we are.
Thank you. That was a message from Taos Pueblo Day School students who really are concerned about what's happening in their environment and what's happening all around them, and support the rights of Mother Earth. And they're doing, expressing it in many, many ways through art and through photography and through music and sharing with each other. So I'm very proud of our youth. In 1990, my first music video premiered in the General Assembly here. Oren was here with me. And I was presented this title, United Nations Ambassador of Youth for the Environment. But today, I'm here to introduce you to a very young ambassador of youth for the environment, someone I'm very proud of. She's an articulate artist, singer-songwriter, actress, and activist. And her name is Takaya.
Hello?
Okay.
My name is Takaya Blaney. I'm 12 years old, and my ancestral name is Chukajimuh, and that was given to me by my Kukba, my grandfather, and that means a person who helped a lot of people. I am from the Slimen Nation, and for the past 4 years, I've been an activist speaking out against unsustainable development on indigenous land, and mainly against the Northern Gateway Pipeline, a pipeline proposal in where I'm from, which is British Columbia. In Canada, we have something called the World Proclamation of 1763, and this proclamation was the first proclamation that based Canada as a country. And it recognizes the rights of Indigenous people inside the borders of Canada. And one of the rights that it recognizes is the right to the jurisdiction over our territory. And it states that unless a treaty has been signed selling that land to the king, we still have right to give our consent and opposition to a corporation proposing to go on our land or do anything involving our land. And we have our decision heard and most of all followed. So that's one of the rights that is recognized. And this is unless a treaty has been signed. So most of Canada has signed treaties, and this happened a long time ago, but since BC is on the West Coast and we were the last nations that were colonized, there aren't a lot of treaties signed. So Slyamin, my nation, is going through the treaty process right now. And I was growing up around that from the time that I was a baby. That, you know, at that age, that's when you absorb the most, and it's when you look at the emotions behind each word and where that's aimed at. And so even then, I was aware that there was something broken in my community and something wrong in my community. Right now, in the treaty process, I was hearing about it as a younger child. I was just shocked from the corruption that we were receiving from the government and the corruption within our community. What has been happening is since our community, most of the adults and most of the elders, they have gone to residential school and haven't received an education more than from past the eighth grade. So this treaty, we were denied the education to really learn about this treaty, what this is about, and for the most of it, what our nation knows about it is that it's self-governance. And most of our nation, they haven't really looked at the small details of this. And they don't know that they're not selling their land, only their land down the river by signing this treaty. They're selling the rights that were recognized in the Royal Proclamation of 1763. They're selling those basic human rights and those indigenous rights that were recognized. In the past few years, it's come to my knowledge that they were handing out illegal status cards to non-native people to say yes to treaty, to vote yes to treaty, without any and without any consent of the nation. Signing, our chief in council signing with Enbridge, a pipeline corporation that's proposing the Keystone XL, the Northern Gateway Pipeline, that I'm very against, to do coal bed methane in Powell Lake, which is a very important lake to our people. And the only way we actually found out about this is because it was on their website. Our nation wasn't aware of this. It was just the chief in council. I've, even since the age of just a baby, and it's really deteriorated over time, how divided our nation is. Our nation's now divided into anti-treaty and pro-treaty. It's sad because I don't get to see half of my family. And there's so much hatred that's dwelling because of what the government has done to us and because of the corruption within our own community and the fraud that is happening. We were the elders in Sliamon, which are the majority of people who are against this treaty are elders. And so when they did blockade the treaty office where the voting was, the gym where the voting was going to take place, when they blockaded that, they were discriminated in such a terrible way. In my culture, you should never discriminate your elders in that way. So that's the division, that how our community and how our nation is really divided. And you know, as I said, we're signing more than our land down the river. We're signing our rights, indigenous rights, and basic human rights. And for my generation as well, knowing about this, I can't help thinking, what is this going to do for my generation? What is this going to do for my people, from the next generation? What is this going to be like? What's our nation going to be like in 2113? You know, once we sign this treaty, we won't have any jurisdiction over what happens on our land. A corporation can just come in and say, okay, we want to do this, and just give their proposal for what they want to do on our land, in our territory, and we won't be able to do anything to stop it. We're being dispossessed of our culture by signing this treaty. How are we supposed to eat a two-headed salmon? How are we supposed to harvest cedar, weave cedar into hats, into baskets? You know, half of being on the coast and one of the nations along the coast, cedar is half of our way of life. That's most of our culture, where most of our culture is. And so since if this treaty were to be signed 20 years from now with all the corporations coming in, logging our territory, destroying our territory, we won't be able to connect with that ecosystem, connect with that land the way that I was able to do, and even my Kukpa, my grandfather, my Chichia, my grandmother, my dad, the way that they were able to do. The next generation, they may not be able to go onto the Sliamon territory without having to breathe with a hand covered over their mouth. They'll lose that sense of connection with that land that as humans we naturally have, and once that's lost, you're basically raising a generation that's not going to be aware or concerned about that land and about that territory, and they're going to be raising the next generation who is going to be raising the generations to follow. So we're being offered $20 to $30 million to sign this treaty just for our entire community. And is $20 to $30 million really worth the future of our people, worth my future, worth my cousin's future, and the children unborn? Is it really worth their future? So this is what I've struggled with, and that this is what I've continued to struggle with. I've struggled with corruption, fraud, and I've all of this within our nation, and what has happened to our nation just is so tragic and so heartbreaking to me. But it's one thing I've learned with my fight for a better future, for my dream of equality and a sustainable future that harmonizes with the land. And that's my dream, to have that kind of future for the next generation to come. That it's one thing to fight for a dream, and it's another to fight for a future. And sadly, I have to do both. Thank you.
Thank you, Takaya. We're so happy to have you here with us today, and I'd like to hear another round of applause for her, please. Thank you. For those of you who are just joining us, welcome, and thank you for sharing this space with us. I would like to make a reminder that we do have translation available. We're all going to be speaking in English today, but we do have a translator translating to Spanish for those of you who would like to listen to that. In addition to Takaya, we have some other esteemed experts here with us today who will address further on the rights of Mother Earth and the importance of our connection to the health of Mother Earth and that for our future generations. This is the second such international dialogue our organizations have coordinated as part of our responsibility and part of our Rights of Mother Earth campaign. If you're interested in hearing more about, you can come and speak to us after the session, as well as we'll be here at the United Nations during the week. This conversation is in response to a call from our elders and leadership. We recognize the importance of the rights of Mother Earth as inherent and imperative. We as young people recognize our responsibility to the earth and have taken this call and brought it forward. We have no other place to call home. We were put here on this earth to protect, steward, and love her as she has done for us. But the recent evolution of the world and activities of others who do not share our perspectives and life ways have caused so many of us to forget or push aside our responsibilities. There is a quote which says something along the lines of, "We as human beings will suffer in proportion to our misdeeds." This reciprocation of treatment has been showing itself in our world. Storms, flood, drought. And we also see the echo of environmental chaos in the social chaos we are experiencing throughout the world today. The continued violations by those dominating entities upon our planet, our mother, has reached a criminal level. Terricide, the killing of our Mother Earth and her ability to nurture and sustain life. Aquicide, the killing of our waters in ways by all forms of exploitation and commodification that destroy the life-giving quality of water. Our earth is in crisis. We are past the tipping point, and the earth is calling for us to help her. We need to make entities accountable for the ongoing destruction we are faced with, such as extractive industries, climate change, and the global food crisis. I'm now going to welcome my friend Brian Manungya here to share a few words. Brian comes from the Hopi people in the high desert region of North America, from the village of Moan Kopi. Brian has extensive experience here at the United Nations Permanent Forum, as well as at the North American and Global Indigenous Youth Caucuses. Brian has also presented internationally on the rights of Mother Earth and the sacredness of water. Brian is the coordinator of Native Youth Cultural Exchange and a founding member of the Native Youth Coalition. He is deeply involved in traditional cultural practice at home in Moan Kopi, grows a sustainable traditional garden, and works in youth empowerment and leadership. Brian's grandfather was one of the early indigenous leaders of North America here at the United Nations many decades ago. His legacy lives on in the good work that Brian is doing. Thank you, Brian, for being here with us today.
Hello, my name is Brian Manangya from the village of Munkabi on the Hopi Reservation. I belong to the Fire Ghost Clan. And just like it was stated, you know, my grandfather, who is from my father's side, from the village of Oraibi, or as many of you may all know it as Old Oraibi, came to the UN and, you know, tried to get the message out there about, you know, prophecy, Hopi prophecy, and whatnot about what's going to happen if we don't begin to correct our changes and what we're going to suffer, you know, if we don't listen, you know, to Mother Earth and what she's telling us. Daily or in ritual, you know, it's always told to us that, you know, that we need to keep her in mind and everybody in mind, and we need to follow the life plan that we were all given to help sustain our ways of life and help Mother Earth, you know, by not destroying what she has given to us. But sadly, you know, nowadays we're doing the opposite. We're really hurting her bad, and we're suffering, you know. We're having Mother Nature come at us, you know, a full force, you know, telling us that we need to quit. You know, quit what you're doing, because, you know, if you continue on, you know, she's gonna come again at us at full force. You know, so we need to take a step back and look at what we're doing, you know, and make those corrections and those changes so that she'll back off, and, you know, we need to just correct it, you know. And it, you know, going back to Hopi prophecy, you know, it was always foretold, you know, these prophecies were given to us in the beginning by Ma, so. You know, they say that he was the first one that we encountered when we came to this world. He's the one that gave us these instructions. He gave everybody their race, every race, their language, their instructions on what to do. So they say that, you know, when we migrated the continents, you know, the people who are living in these different areas are the individuals or the group of peoples who did not complete their migrations and decided to stay there. And so, you know, that's how we're connected, we're related in that way. You know, you are our brothers and sisters who have not completed your migrations back to Hopi. So when they talk about that, you know, they're always stressing to us, you know, listen to it. You know, one of them right now, the biggest thing right now that we're facing is, you know, continue on our ceremonies and stuff like that, because without that, we're not able to keep that connection to the earth, you know, and stuff like that. And they say that if we don't continue on these ceremonies or whatever, you know, that's gonna be it for us, you know. We don't know what it is, you know. We're slowly beginning to recognize signs, but, you know, there's different sayings and what's gonna happen. You know, one of them is, you know, the gourd of ashes. You know, I don't know if many of you guys have heard of that saying, but the gourd of ashes, now they, some of the elders have identified them as the atomic bomb, you know, because they say that, you know, this, once this gourd of ashes drops, you know, the seas will boil red, and, you know, that's all that's going to be left is a gourd of ashes. And, you know, another one is, you know, along the lines of keeping keeping in the line of your spiritual paths is, you know, keep up with your language, keep up with working with the earth, that type of thing. Because again, if you lose that connection with the earth, you know, who? If we lose that connection, they say that in the previous world, when we got to this world, you know, it was a group of men who were pure at heart, who were the ones that helped save us to get here. So we begin to lose that connection to the earth, and we begin to go stray off this path, you know, when it comes to that time of purification or time of destruction of this earth, who are the ones that are going to be there to save us? Who are the ones that are going to be there to go and sit and meditate, do what they have to do to call upon Creator or whoever to get us to the next world if we were going to get saved? You know, and I don't know, you know, because we're all so involved in this modern world that we're pushing that our traditions and our connections to the earth to the side, and we're more involved in the modern world. You know, so what are you going to do when you go home? Or what are you going to do? Go home and ask questions, you know, what can I do, or what am I supposed to be doing to keep my connection to the earth, to help her keep going, you know, whether it be a prayer or whatever, you know. Do what you can. Go home, learn your languages. You know, another one of our prophecies is that once we lose all our languages, that's it for us. You know, they say that again, something is going to happen. The world is going to come to a complete stop. So, you know, again, that's another important thing is learn your languages, because the spirits or the earth, you know, she communicates us. She only knows what we're talking about when we talk in our languages. She doesn't understand English. So, you know, I could go on and on about it, but, you know, that's just one of the things that I wanted to do was, you know, to let you guys know, to, you know, encourage you guys to go home and do what you can to help preserve your languages, your ways of life when you go home, because, you know, I don't want this prophecy to be fulfilled. Not in my lifetime or in my niece's or nephew's lifetime, because it's a real scary prophecy, and unfortunately it's coming at us fast. You know, so go home and do what you can. That's what they always tell us when we go into the kiva. You know, just don't think about yourself. Think about everybody else in the world. And that's what they came and delivered that other message here at the UN. You know, that was part of their message. You know, but... You know, I'm going to be honest with you. Sadly, you know, nowadays we at Hopi are just as, you know, we're fastly assimilating into the Western world. You know, we're losing a lot of that, our language, our culture and stuff like that. Prophecy, talk like this is not being passed down. You know, a lot of the younger generations don't even know about this. And again, if we forget it, they say that at Hopi, you know, at home, that if we're the first ones to lose it, then everybody else is going to suffer. So again, you know, that's all I wanted to do was remind you, do what you can when you go home. Talk to your elders, your people, and just figure out ways what we can do to keep from Mother Earth, Mother Nature coming at us. She's, you know, because she's going to take us out, or something's going to take us out. We don't know what it is. And it's going to come so fast at us that, you know, when we least expect it. So, ansa ema ala kya kyang, ema ang kai o yak tani, o vi ansa ema habi, emu la vai, emu nang vasi kasi to kya ni, itam, ansa itam, wu pat kati ni, lol mat kati, sa wo na na wak nai, ema ansa ema ala kya kyang, emu kikya, punya, ema ansa o yak tani, na hong vito tangwa, you guys. And sai ko kwai, thank you.
Thank you, Brian. And I would like to remind everyone that if we have enough time at the end, there will be a little bit of question and answer, but I would like to go right on to our next speaker. Tanya Gunella Frischner is of the Onondaga Nation, Haudenosaunee Six Nations Confederacy. Tanya served as North American representative to the Permanent Forum from 2008 to 2010. While serving on the forum, she was special rapporteur on the doctrine of discovery and has also spent more than a decade engaged in Indigenous women's leadership, development, and advocacy through her work with the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus as one of its conveners. She is the president of the American Indian Law Alliance and chair of the Seventh Generation Fund. Tanya has been at the forefront to secure the right of self-determination for Indigenous peoples for many decades. And her expertise and leadership has helped her open the doors for Indigenous women and girls previously closed to them in this arena. Thank you for being here with us today, Tanya.
Thank you. Nyawe Haskano. I'm glad to see that you are all well, and I would like to thank our moderator, Chisa Oros Peters, who is on the staff of the Seventh Generation Fund and also a youth leader. Just as a sidebar, Chisa has been attending the United Nations since she was 14. So for many of the women sitting in this room, it is quite a delight to see her monitoring an important gathering such as this, not only at the United Nations, but in the ECOSOC chamber. So I'd like to salute her for that. I'd like to ask our timekeeper, Kara. I'm going to take 6 minutes, and if you would give me a two-minute heads up. I'm going to cut my presentation a little bit so that we can get to everybody's comments as well as the Q&A, which is always great fun and always very interesting. What we have been discussing today in terms of Mother Earth is about every day being Mother Earth Day, and not just April 20th as it is throughout the world. We need to commemorate Mother Earth Day each day and remember that the resources, the natural resources and the beings that are part of Mother Earth are our relatives and not our resources. In 1977, our leaders went to the United Nations in Geneva, and they sent a message titled The Basic Call to Consciousness. And I'm seeing those terms all over the place. Over 30 years later, I see it in the reports of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. And it is a message that one of our great scholars, John Mohawk, help bring forward and develop so that when our leaders attended the first gathering of Indigenous peoples of the Western Hemisphere, they had that message that has not changed since today. And I see one of our great leaders, Burjo Kilstraight, who was also at that meeting in 1977, and our chief, Orrin Lyons, who was also at that meeting in 1977. The message has always been consistent, and it has always been very clear. And Todd Idaho, Chief Sid Hill, talked about that today. He spoke the words that come before all words, and he acknowledged all of the natural world, and he gave thanks to each of them. And it was such a great thing to hear it being translated in the 6 official languages of the United Nations. I wish I could speak Chinese so I could have heard it in Chinese or Russian. It was quite amazing. And thank you, Betty Lyons, for doing that for us from Onondaga. The message that was brought forth at this meeting of Indigenous Peoples of the Western Hemisphere, we saw it in 1923 when one of our leaders attended the League of Nations gathering in Geneva. We saw it, as I stated, in 1977, and we see it here today in 2013, that enduring message is encapsulated throughout our cosmovisions. It's encapsulated in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. That enduring message also acknowledges collective rights for the first time. Collective rights, and an important piece for us to remember. But it also addresses the right to self-determination of Indigenous peoples. Now, that language that you see in Article 3 on the right to self-determination is taken exactly from Article 1 of the 2 Human Rights Covenants. Nothing more, nothing less. And governments really need to be very conscious of that, so that there is no interpretation of our right to self-determination being anything but a human right based on the Human Rights Covenants. I'd like to bring forward an important conference that happened in 2010 in Cochabamba, Bolivia. Many people were there. One of our leaders led a delegation, Tom Goldtooth, and out of that conference came a declaration, and it was the Universal Declaration of the Rights of Mother Earth. And it called on the UN General Assembly to adopt this declaration as a common standard of achievement for all peoples and all nations of the world. We need to reaffirm that declaration. We need to bring it back to be reconsidered during the UN Permanent Forum these next 2 weeks, because both the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and this Universal Declaration of the Rights of Mother Earth are intertwined, very much intertwined, especially in spirit, as 2 quite important declarations. I would lastly like to acknowledge Takaya, who earlier said, how do we sign a treaty that is really going to just give us access to two-headed salmon? Very profound and very visual. And I would agree with her. A few million dollars is just a drop in the bucket for governments. Trying to sustain yourself when your lifeways and your foods are being disseminated is pretty much impossible. And it's the road to destruction for Indigenous peoples. Thank you very much for your attention. Danito.
Thank you, Tanya. Next, we're going to hear from Orrin Lyons. Orrin Lyons is faith keeper of the Onondaga Nation Haudenosaunee Six Nations Confederacy. Orin is an internationally renowned indigenous leader. Through his work with the United Nations Environment Program, Traditional Circle of Indian Elders and Youth, Seventh Generation Fund, as well as numerous others, Orin's longtime leadership and vision provide a constant reminder of our responsibilities to Mother Earth and her health. In fact, like Brian's grandfather, Orin was among the first of our leaders. They stood side by side in the early years when Indigenous peoples were not even allowed in the United Nations building. And now we are here today having this conversation about the rights of Mother Earth in the ECOSOC chamber in the UN building. His leadership, diplomacy, and expertise has helped lead us to this conversation today. Thank you, Orin.
Thank you. Dawahaskayanu. Thank you for being well. Thank you for being here. It's interesting to me how the values change as you get older. One of the most important things in my life right now is to know how close is the nearest toilet. Yeah, things get to be important. It's sad, it's really sad to hear a young child giving instructions to her own leaders. It's really a sad comment on leadership in Indian country today. It's not the only place that this is happening. The selling out of the rights of children and grandchildren was a very, very long time ago when our people were instructed about that responsibility. And we try our best to keep that moving. And to the Daho exercises responsibility today, opening this session, reminding people of the fundamental responsibility to be thankful for what we have. Ceremonies are our ceremonies, and all across the world, and Indigenous people have ceremonies. And they're pretty much the same in different languages. I know you don't have to understand the language at times to know what they're saying, because we all say the same thing. When we opened our meeting in Geneva in 77, our leaders could speak on behalf of everybody. Although we had just met, it took us only about a couple of hours to set who the speakers were, because everybody understood the same thing. We had the same rule, we had the same law, and different languages, but it was all the same. So we had no problem in assigning the responsibilities of who was speaking. And if you didn't understand what they were saying in their language, you did understand the intent of that statement. So we have a common language. Indigenous people have a common language. It's the language of the earth. We are the ones who give thanks to the earth. That's what we do. And we do it good. We know how. Songs, dances, ceremonies, food. We know how. We do it good. My question here to the world at large, which is represented here in these halls, how are you going to educate over 7 billion people to their relationship to the earth? How are you going to do that? Because that's what it's going to require for them to respectfully conduct themselves. If they don't understand the relationship, then they're going to continue to do what they will do because they don't have instruction. So part of the responsibility of the indigenous people here is to take this time to instruct your brothers and sisters, because that's who they are. They're our family. Just a different color. We can change blood with one another. Doesn't matter what color you are. Can't get closer than that. That's a family. And we have to think that way in a very, very large, large perspective now, because it's a very common problem, which is the survival of our species. Remember John Mohawk saying, very interesting, he said, well, as far as I can see, we're still a biological experiment on whether we're going to survive as a species. We're not doing that well, you know. We're pushing it now very hard, very hard. $2 million, my God. What does that amount to today's time? And to sell the rights of your grandchildren, not even to the seventh generation. When they talk about seven generations, Peacemaker said to the leaders, when you sit and you counsel for the welfare of the people, think not of yourself, nor of your family, nor even your generation. Make your decision on behalf of the seventh generation coming, so they will have what you have today. They will enjoy the life that you have today. That's your responsibility. That's an adult responsibility. That's a grown-up responsibility. That's a grandfather responsibility, not to sell it. And that's what happened. Just the other day, I think 4 days ago, United Nations sold responsibility. Sold completely. Turned the land over to the United States government. Agreed to pay the state, agreed to pay the taxes. Sold it all. And for what? And again, you come back to the worth of money. I knew your grandfather, David, and I knew him very well. We worked together. Listened to him. He was an old man then, really old. He said, all I need is my jug of water and my few kernels of corn and a place to see where the sun rises. That's all I need, he said. So the values that he was talking about, the values that drive the world's nations today, the nation states, it's an economic value. In the end, will mean nothing. And we are pushing that very heavily now. Time is here. Global change is on its way. It's not coming, it's here. It will just simply begin to accelerate and to magnify until there's nothing left. There's no pity in nature. Nature has no pity whatsoever. Only the law, only the rules. All the rules that we have, that's our ceremonies. That's how we teach our people to be thankful, grateful, respectful. I don't know how we're going to teach 7 billion people in the short time that we have. to conduct themselves in an adult manner, in a responsible way. The values of indigenous people are just the same. Peace, responsibility, thankfulness. And a big one, too, they tell us, enjoy life. Enjoy the day. Get the best out of the day, today. Get the best out of the day. One day at a time, for any one of us. No one knows who's going to be seeing the sunset tonight sitting here. You don't know. You just don't know. So you get the best out of the day, and you're always ready, and you're always prepared. So the gathering, I remember in 1972, we couldn't come across the street here. A phalanx of police straight across the street, and we stood there demanding justice. Small group, we couldn't cross the street. Today, this event was opened by an indigenous leader. That's a big crossing of the street. Sitting here in this room, that's a big crossing of the street. We're fighting our way, and if you don't have a long perspective on it, sometimes you think nothing's happening. But I've seen some changes there. Strong voices here, these young people. Makes me feel good when I hear that. Strong voices. Young people demanding leaders. Indian country leaders today are failing miserably. They're not just failing, they're failing miserably. They're not standing up for the future. Don't have the right values. $2 million. It's hard to imagine. Be that as it may, we've come a long ways here. The whole point of us gathering here, and I say this to all of you gathered here, is you have to stick together. Do not fight one another here while you're here. It's common cause for one and all. You don't get this opportunity. A lot of people have suffered for you to be here. So you make the best of it. Get something from it. Take something home. Stay together. Peacemaker said to that when he made the union of the Six Nations. Now that you've gathered, he said, never fall out with one another. There is no issue big enough to destroy your union. Set it aside, whatever it is, if it's going to destroy something here. Work together. That's your power. That's what we brought you here for, to work together. Take advantage of it, Donita.
Thank you, Uncle Orin. Now we're going to open up for, we have time for just one or two questions, if anybody would like to share or hear from our presenters this afternoon. Up in the back, I think the one on the, yeah. Your microphone is on. There you go.
Thank you, all of you, for your profound words of wisdom. I am Petuch from Acoma Pueblo. And, you know, in thinking about what Orin just stated about failing miserably, I think as indigenous peoples, we are failing ourselves because we don't know how to survive as indigenous peoples anymore. we're caught up in this capitalistic gain, and I wonder today how we're going to survive, how we think we're going to survive when we're so dependent upon money. One of the Akama prophecies, as we were migrating from Stipop and going along into the journey of life, the two sisters, one being of the white race and one being of the indigenous peoples, as they parted the ways, the Akama woman turned to her white sister and said to her, "At some point in the future, I will be your child." Interpreting that to mean that we were going to come back together. It is today that we're here together, and we have to survive together. That is our challenge. But then my question again always becomes, how do we as indigenous people survive in this modern world today when we ourselves are becoming caught up in the money game? Thank you.
Does anybody have a response?
You're right.
Any other questions? The lady in the white hat with her hand up. There's a button on the screen in front of you on the lower left-hand side. If you push it, your microphone will turn on. And can I ask the most recent speaker to please turn their microphone off up at the top?
Gracias por el espacio que me brindan. Yo quisiera dar las gracias a los hermanos anteriores, el reconocimiento que se lo hace del valor de nuestra madre tierra. Y cada uno de nosotros quisiéramos sentir que nosotros somos parte de la madre tierra. ¿Por qué? Porque hay un mandato que dice la madre tierra, de la madre tierra nacemos, en la madre tierra vivimos, de ella nos alimentamos y a ella volvemos. Entonces esto tenemos que coger nosotros, todos, sentir que somos parte de la madre tierra, saber. Y por eso los pueblos indígenas nos levantamos, gritamos, lloramos, hablamos por la defensa de nuestra madre, porque a la madre no la podemos vender, comercializar o descuartizar como lo hacemos. Solamente los que no sienten, los ricos o nuestros gobiernos de turno, hacen lo que ellos quieren. Y estamos aquí, los pueblos indios, por esto, porque queremos el respeto a nuestra madre, que no vendan, que no descuarticen, que no lo envenenen. ¿Por qué digo esto? Porque envenenan vendiendo a las transnacionales. No solamente matan o envenenan a la madre tierra, sino a los que nos rodea, a nuestros hermanos, a nuestro abuelo agüita, a nuestro abuelo aire, a nuestros hermanos, los animalitos, a nuestras piedras. Por eso ahora ya en las tierras ya no tenemos la agua saludable, que es el elemento de la vida, el agua de los manantiales puras, sino envenenadas, donde nos enfermamos al tomar esas aguas. Nuestros animales, donde se mueren, donde ya los peces están exterminándose. Entonces, ahora es un reto para todos nosotros que tenemos que fortalecer el cuidado a nuestra madre tierra. Y por ende, no solo la madre tierra, para el pueblo indígena, para los pueblos, es todo. el aire, la tierra, el agua, el fuego, los animales y todo lo que nos rodean. Eso quisiera que nos entiendan, que no es solamente la tierra para nosotros, es todo un todo. Y por eso estamos aquí, para fortalecer y luchar por esos derechos y por nuestra madre. Muchas gracias.
Gracias, Ana María. We have time for just one more question, and I saw a hand come up on my right.
Sí. Sakarik konohel yarutsili watch. Nimelaki kotemal priwanimain kunil watch konohel. Hermanas, hermanos, todos, abuelos, mayores que están entre nosotros. Quisiera empezar esta breve intervención reconociendo la luz que nos da el abuelo Oren Lyon, las sabias palabras de la hermana Tonia Gondela, que siempre se dirige con mucha elocuencia, con mucha sabiduría. Y de igual manera motiva a ver que ustedes como jóvenes están aquí tomando responsabilidad para hacer un relevo de responsabilidad. Creo que nuestros pueblos indígenas siempre acostumbramos heredar los compromisos, heredar la responsabilidad, porque no somos seres eternos. Tenemos una vida que pasa por diferentes etapas y de repente en una etapa de estas vidas cargamos la responsabilidad social, la responsabilidad comunitaria. Y creo que aquí motiva ver que los jóvenes están tomando la iniciativa de hablar no solo por los derechos de la madre tierra, sino los derechos de la vida. Los elementos sagrados, la tierra, el agua, el aire, la energía del Padre Sol, son energías que complementan y nos dan la vida. Así es de que yo creo importante tomar el espacio y unir esfuerzos. Yo soy de la idea de que no hemos fracasado. Como pueblo indígena, yo creo, no me creo y no quiero aceptar que somos pueblos fracasados. Yo creo que, por lo menos en lo que concierne a este continente, a lo largo y ancho del continente siempre ha habido resistencia desde la invasión, resistencia durante la colonización, y hemos tenido la resistencia actual. La Madre Tierra nos fue despojada de nuestros territorios con la violencia. Pero ahí vivimos todavía nosotros. Ahí estamos, hablando todavía de la esperanza de volver a luchar por ella. Así es de que yo me siento feliz, comparto el sentimiento de todos los hermanos y quisiera también reconocer aquí a todos los presentes, los hermanos que vienen del sur, del centro, del norte. Y quisiera especialmente agradecer la oportunidad que la séptima generación nos da de compartir siempre el espacio y la solidaridad que nos brindan desde acá. Gracias.
Thank you, Policarpo, for your words. This concludes our time together. I would like to thank everyone for coming and joining us, partaking in our discussion and sharing this space. I'd like to say thank you to our sponsors, as well as the presenters up here with me and everyone who made this possible, as well as our amazing translator, Cassandra, who's up in the booth. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your day.